This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It's and more. That's Voices from the Edge, this Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
The Community for Earth and Economic Justice Action Group and Alliance for Democracy will screen Bitter 70 on March 8th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue. In 2008, University of Utah economics student and Unitarian Universalist Tim DeChristopher committed an act which would redefine patriotism in our time. Follow Tim, Bitter 70, from college student to incarcerated felon. He bid millions of dollars he didn't have to save thousands of pristine acres of land surrounding U.S. national parks. KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of this film screening. More information can be found at kboo.fm/bitter70film2013.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today our guests are sisters who lost their father to colorectal cancer, and they've now dedicated their lives to making sure that you don't lose your life to this very treatable disease. So we're live in Studio 2 with Michelle and Marcia Baker of the Steve Baker Colorectal Cancer Alliance, where their motto is Conquering colorectal cancer, one conversation at a time. They have a food cart and catering business, Hope Kitchen, serving healthy food and information. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having us.
You know, it's interesting to come on the air and say the words colorectal cancer, because a lot of times we deal with issues, but this is almost an issue where you're kind of fighting yourself. People don't want to face it. People don't want to deal with it. But what you travel around and let people know, and also with your sister, that really this is a very treatable illness. Is it the most cured cancer or something
it's
like that?
It's the most preventable cancer.
There you go. That's what we're talking about.
When it's found in its early stages, it's the most treatable.
There you go. Talk a little about your work.
Well, once we lost our father in 2008, we were obviously devastated, and upon that, we traveled to D.C. in 2009 to join a group called Fight Colorectal Cancer, and they are the leading advocacy group in Washington, D.C. for colorectal cancer, and they just inspired us to come back home and to continue their efforts, and we wanted to share our story with our community so that our story does not have to be anyone else's story, because colorectal cancer is the 90% preventable, but it is the second leading cancer killer, so we just did not think those two facts match.
It's true. And so now I've heard you talk a little bit about your dad. Tell us the story. Tell us your story. Can you tell us your family story?
Sure. At the time of our dad's diagnosis, Marcia and I were living in San Diego. And I was actually proud at that time when I would go to the doctors, they would say, "Do you have a history of cancer?" And of course, no. Shot out my mouth immediately. Yeah. And then shortly after that, we got a call from my sister saying that our father was sick, and he had been diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And so getting that devastating news, Marcia and I, we first came back home for our dad's surgery, which went great. And then a little bit after his surgery, he started on chemo, and for months he did really, really well. And prior to him starting his chemo, Marcia and I moved back here to help care for him along with our two other sisters and my mom. And so we all would go to his follow-up appointments, and we got pretty good news. And then after a while, his voice started to change. And so all of us, we noticed something was different with our dad. And so some days he wasn't feeling good. And so it was a particular time where we actually decided to take him to the hospital. And when we went to the hospital this particular time, they diagnosed him with a blood clot. And they wanted to send him home at that time, but we just didn't feel very comfortable with that. And so we asked that they keep him, and that is when they admitted him into Providence Cancer Center. It was probably like 2 days later, which they told us that the cancer had spread to his lungs. And at that time, our dad was still trying to fight. He still wanted to see if there was chemo options to try to combat the cancer that had spread to his lungs. But unfortunately, the cancer was just stronger than him. And so we were in the hospital maybe for about 7 days or so. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we made a family decision that he wanted to go home. And we placed him on hospice. And about 2 days later,
he passed away after he came home. I mean, I think he waited to go home. He wanted to go home. So that was probably the best thing for him.
Right. And I don't know how often the entire family comes home when the dad is ill like that. So your dad, Steve, was an incredibly compelling person. Talk a little bit about the man whose memory has inspired this incredible movement by your family. Talk about your dad.
Well, my dad was the absolute family man. He loved getting his family together. That was like his absolute best favorite thing. I mean, we took camping trips together every Sunday. He's called us and, okay, I'm cooking dinner. Come over. Or breakfast. Yes, want to go to breakfast or come over for breakfast. That's probably the most thing I miss about my dad is hearing breakfast is ready. Or you guys come, you know, you want to come over for breakfast or what are you doing for dinner? That was probably the biggest thing. He was the absolute best barbecuer. I mean, he was the master. We actually use his signature barbecue sauce at the Hope Kitchen. He was just the biggest family man. I can probably say he loved sports. I mean, the biggest Laker fan. He loved Portland, but he loved his Lakers. He did not care that he moved to Portland because we are originally from Los Angeles. So he loved his Lakers. He even loved the Los Angeles Raiders.
No.
Yes.
Just kidding.
And, of course, USC. Those are his three top teams. He probably just, those are the two biggest things I can say about him. Like I said, he was the biggest, best barbecue master. Mm-hmm. But
just a big teddy bear, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he was
Mr. Sensitivity. I mean, he would cry at the drop of a hat, whether happy or sad moments, he would cry. So, of course, when we found out my dad was sick, we moved home. We found out my dad was sick in July 2007. He got sick right after the 4th of July. That's when everything kind of went into motion. He thought he was just sick from too much 4th of July festivities, and he became ill from that. And then we got a call from my sister, Larisha, and that's when everything went into motion. And we were back home by middle of October. Mm-hmm. So we went into motion really quick to get back home because he went into chemo treatments because it was stage 4. So we had a 12-round treatment, the first one. And so we moved back really fast so we could help him out and try to get him healthy. So it was just 10 months after when he passed.
What does it mean, stage 4?
Stage 4 means that it has metastasized to other organs. And at his stage, he had it had metastasized to his liver.
Mm-hmm. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa. We're live in Studio 2 with the Baker Sisters, and we're talking about their organization, the Steve Baker Colorectal Cancer Alliance, and how you listeners should be paying attention to your health to make sure that you don't and the people around you don't have to go down the same path that Steve Baker went down. And I know that there's a really at least one super beloved KBOO engineer from past years who is a survivor of colon cancer. And so it's something that KBOO takes seriously. And it's really about the awareness piece. And having spoken before with Michelle and Marcia, I have to pull this out. And some of this is going to be hard. If you don't want to talk about it, let me know. But when your dad passed, you sat around and thought about it. Where did this come from? People that I know that live with cancer or experience cancer, they spend a lot of time thinking, how did this happen? How did this happen? And I know you have thought about that. And so you decided as you went, you wanted to actually act on this knowledge that you had. Where does colon cancer come from? How do you avoid it? How do you avoid the fatality piece of it? And you came over and you came to food. What do you think about that? I have to ask you. Your father, you loved him because he nurtured you with food, and now you've turned around and created your approach to helping people stay healthy built around food, just like your dad did. Talk a little bit about that. What do you think? Where did it come from?
Well, the food transition, it was kind of a combination. It started actually before my dad passed. We just started embarking on a new, I guess, a healthier way of eating. Kind of wanted to lose some weight and just trying to be healthier. This is probably when we first moved to California. So I stopped eating red meat a little bit. We kind of reduced it. Pork and beef kind of reduced it. And so I just started eating whole grains, no more white bread. I just changed. We just started kind of changing. I dropped a lot of weight. You know what I mean? So I started exercising. So it was kind of, that happened before my dad got sick. It was even funny because when we would come home to visit, my dad would always barbecue. Like, that was just what he did. But he didn't know what to cook for us anymore. So he would say, you know, he was making ribs. He was making prime rib or whatever. Well, what do you guys eat? So he started smoking turkey for us, which was still absolutely delicious. And that got ate up just like the ribs did. So it was easy because he still could cook really well. So it didn't really matter that it wasn't red meat or salty pork. He knew how to cook. So the turkey was just as good. So that was kind of opened our eyes. He still loved his meat to his last days. He loved his meat. He couldn't transition all the way to that way. But we kept on our healthy way of eating after we found out the internet, you know, once someone gets ill, we all go to the internet and we start Googling. We find out what causes this, what could contribute to this, or, you know, what are the things that could, you know, help us not prevent this. Mm-hmm. So red meat is an actual contributing factor to colon cancer, and processed meats, so sausages, hot dogs, things of that nature, luncheon meats, those are contributing factors. So we just started, it was like that just made it even more concrete what I'd already done. It was like, okay, I'm on the right track. Mm-hmm. So we just kept on that track, and then we wanted to influence other people because in the black culture, we eat a lot of red meat. We eat a lot of pork. We love to barbecue. It's our culture. We do it with family. That's just what we do. We love to cook together. We eat together. But we can do it in a way that it's not making us sick with all of the pork and the fatty meats and the sausage. We can do it in a way that doesn't have to make us sick. So with the Hope Kitchen, we make things such as collard greens. Traditionally, collard greens are made with like a ham hock or salt pork. Ours are absolutely vegetarian, but they're absolutely delicious still. They're spicy, they're good, but they don't have any meat in them. Mm-hmm. So vegetarians can eat them, and you're still getting, you know, a good source of fiber, but you're not killing it off with all the salt and the pork. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of our ways of kind of influencing the community.
And we are joined by Cressida Mosley, my personal favorite eating and healthy lifestyle expert, cookbook author. She travels around the region now educating people about diet and health. Yeah, it's true. It's just a word. She's not mocking me. Right. She's not mocking me. Yeah, here. Pull this. There you go. Cressida, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm a little late. Traffic.
No problem. That's what happens.
Sorry.
And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. This is live talk radio. And we wanted to open up the phone lines and put it out to you listeners. Are you living with colon cancer? Do you know someone who is living with it, or have you dealt with it? We'd love to hear your story. 503-231-8187. I'll start by telling my family story. Colon cancer. My husband just had a colonoscopy, and he went through all these things to get the colonoscopy. On another show, we'll talk about the insurance industry and the cost of some of this stuff. That's not what we're going to talk about today, because today we just want to bring you into the circle of looking at how we can take care of ourselves and try to avoid getting to the place where we are having to go to the insurance company. But anyway, so my husband, and he had the colonoscopy, and it was really intimidating. I know a lot of people don't want to deal with the possibility of colon cancer because they're like, no, that's going to be painful. Even just to get the test is going to be painful. I have to tell you guys, so to get the colonoscopy, what my husband went through, my husband doesn't do drugs, okay? He doesn't like them. He doesn't feel comfortable with them. And he doesn't like pharmaceuticals either. And he was very brave about, because he had a preliminary positive test for colon cancer. So he had to go get the full colonoscopy. And so the week before you go, you have to take what I call diarrhea juice, whatever. They clean you out, right, to make it easier. Because what the doctors are looking for is tiny, tiny, tiny things, right?
Polyps.
Yep.
Tiny things. And so, listeners, this is what I want to tell you. And I know that there's people listening right now and they're going, oh my God, did she say colorectal? No, I'm not going to do that. But my husband says he went in there to get the procedure. They gave him the, I'm calling it colonoscopy tranks. We're just calling it colonoscopy tranks. We don't know what's in there. But basically, my husband said he's never had such a positive drug experience. And they gave him the drug and then he went, oh, this is going to be fine. And then they said it's over. And he said, no. Anyway, so that's the story. The actual procedure was not bad at all. And I was surprised to hear that. In fact, I'm a little less scared about getting something like that for myself. So that's my family story. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're talking about colon cancer prevention, healthy living to keep from getting into the place where you have to call Kaiser, right? That's what we're talking about. Although you do want your checkup. You do want your checkup.
Absolutely. You want to make sure that you have that relationship with your primary physician. And so when you do have things that may be bothering you, you can explain it to them and they will know that this may be out of the ordinary for you because you have that relationship with that primary physician. But make sure you're getting your blood pressure checked, your cholesterol checks. It's not just about preventing, you know, cancer. That's a big thing. That's what we are, you know, what we push. But overall, it's about overall health. And we also like to say if you're loving your heart, you're loving your colon as well. So.
That's so charming. I know, we're here talking about cancer, but I feel like this is a warm conversation. Yeah. I feel like it's a supportive conversation. And we do have a bunch of callers, but Christina, mostly, you've got some things going on lately. Tell us what you've got going on. The cookbook came out.
Well, the cookbook was released in August. We've been doing very well with that.
Cooking just outside.
Shop, cook, eat outside of the box with Christina Mosley.
Right.
Just trying to move everybody outside that processed food box. We are what we eat. That is a very true statement. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to get everybody to realize how simple and enjoyable it is to make food at home and eat it at home again, right? And so just been doing a lot with that. Been in Clark College lecturing there and showing the kids, putting the cookbook to life, bringing the cookbook to life for the kids there. Doing cooking classes for kids now. Loving that. I have one coming up Sunday, March 17th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. At Chuck's Produce out in
Vancouver.
So that's free. So kids 9 and over can do that.
Now you're partnering with Multnomah County to do something. Is that what you were just talking about?
No, I didn't partner with Multnomah County. I was with the bakers here.
Oh, there you go.
Just a couple weeks ago for the Eat to Live panel. But I haven't got with Multnomah County yet. Okay. I'm waiting on a phone call, Multnomah County. Okay. Where you at?
Yeah.
Let's hook them up.
Yeah.
Right. Where you at?
That's the way to do it.
It's true. You could do that. And we, you know, listeners here, I want to put this out one more time. You know, listeners, are you living with colon cancer? Is someone in your family living with colon cancer, or have you beat colon cancer? We would love to hear your story, and that number to call, 503-231-8187. And we have Julie on the phone. Julie, what's going on?
Hi there. Hey. Hi, Baker sisters.
Hello.
Hi, I am a colon cancer survivor, and I know the Baker sisters, and they are fabulous ladies, and I've been to their Hope Kitchen, and it's fabulous food as well, so just a plug for that.
All right.
I am a colon cancer survivor, and I beat colon cancer, and in April I will have hit my 5-year survival rate, which isn't very high for a colon cancer survivor.
Congratulations. What, yeah. I want to ask you, Julie, when did you first feel that something was wrong, and what sent you to the doctor? I feel like that's an important point because I'm sure there's people listening right now that maybe should, even if they don't have health insurance, maybe should consider seeking out a health provider. So what were the key things that sent you to the doctor?
The only thing for me, I felt completely fine. I had noticed blood in my stool, and for me that wasn't normal. So I think a lot of it is about paying attention to what is normal or abnormal for you, and that's all individual. So for me, I had never had hemorrhoid problems, ever had bleeding problems, so that was out of the norm for me. And that happened to coincide with my upcoming physical, and when they asked what's been different the past year, I spoke up and I said, well, I don't know if this is a big deal, but this is what I've noticed. And the nurse practitioner said, well, it's probably nothing. It could be internal fissures, but do me a favor here, you know, go get a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. And I did, and it just took off from there.
All right. Have you made changes in your life since your diagnosis? Is there anything you're doing different with your life?
Oh, yes. Yes, especially along the lines of eating. And not, what's kind of hard is I wasn't in that high-risk category to begin with. So, you know, I was younger. I was 45 when I was diagnosed, not overweight, not a smoker. And I ate pretty well. But I would say that I've paid more attention to eating more along the greens line, you know, the vegetables, less meat in general, higher fiber, definitely. So, you know, I wouldn't say drastic changes, exercise as well. But then again, that's kind of hard because I've always been pretty active. So, you know, just being mindful maybe of smaller change, nothing real drastic.
All right, Miss Julie, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Julie.
Okay, bye, ladies.
Bye, Julie. Bye.
Did you want to say something, Miss Cressida?
Well, I like what she said. You know, she's just being mindful. And I think that's very important here, is being mindful of our choices. We've been bombarded by a lot of different forces with advertising and marketing of what we should eat and what that looks like. But we know a lot better now.
Yeah.
And so I think when you know better, you should do better. And once you get the information, then it's up to you to make the changes. And so it sounds like she was already on the path. Awesome. You know, there's some of us that are not on the path, but we can get there. You know, it's
one of the things that gets me, and we do have another caller. We'll go to them in just a second. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. But one of the things that gets me is that, okay, so on my route to work, now there's two new 7-Eleven stores, okay, mm-hmm. and that's in Northeast Portland. And where there had been, basically this one is in a place that I would describe as a food desert. So I see loads of people going there, all yes. kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And when I see what people are coming out with these gigantic beverages, these gigantic mm-hmm. caffeine and sugar beverages, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the convenience. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear all the time. And yet, the thing that strikes me is that real food is not inconvenient. And I have a coworker that I adore, and he eats those little oatmeals that come packaged in a box. And I'm like, you know what? You can actually get bulk oats mm-hmm. that cost like 89 cents a pound, and that's a kind of a lot. You can make them the same way you make those instant oats. Believe it or not, rolled oats are instant. Hello.
Exactly.
So you could actually, and you know, you could actually, I don't mean to be a weirdo, but you know, we do it at our house. I mean, some people don't like a micro, but you could take just, you know, oatmeal that's bulk oatmeal and stick it in a bowl with some water in it. Probably don't use a plastic bowl. Probably use a glass bowl.
Exactly.
Bowl, mm-hmm. And stick it in the micro or even pour boiling water on top of it and it will turn into oatmeal. It, yes. What? That's what oatmeal is. So sometimes that's what I'm concerned about is that you can actually make it even easier than the 7-Eleven does.
Yes, but I think the issue is what I've learned as I've been out and doing food presentations, if people see it, they believe it.
Yeah.
Whereas when we're just telling them and they don't get the concepts, because what happens when I go to Clark and I do those presentations in front of those students, they're like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, we've been being duped. Mm-hmm. Basically, the industry has made us believe that this box processed food is simpler, but it actually isn't. And it's not cost effective. And it's not good for us. So there's so many reasons why. So, yes, all this stuff can be done at home. I tell them all the time, anything that lives in a box or a package, hello, the okay. concept came from them making it fresh at first, and then they boxed it. So you can make all these things at home, but just a little bit more time, right, because you got to be prepared. Mm-hmm. shopping in bulk, it takes a little bit of time, doesn't it? You got to go through those
bins. Winco. I mean, I'm having a love affair with Winco now. Winco has a very big bulk section.
Exactly. But it takes a little bit longer because you have to be prepared to get all those little tags and stuff. So it does. So it's time. It's commitment. Right. It's saying to myself, I'm going to get to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make the commitment to get the groceries. And that's why the book is called Shop, Cook, Eat, right? Because you got to shop before you can do the cooking. Right.
And if I don't get to Winco on the weekend, then I don't have anything for lunch for the whole week.
Exactly. So you have to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. Right. But actually, what takes longer with me at Winco is that I'm chatting at everybody. Look at that chocolate bin. I'm staying away from. No, I'm not. Anyway, we do have callers. Let's go to the phone lines. I'm sorry. What's the name? Rod. Rod, is that you?
Good morning.
Right on. What's going on, sir?
I just recently come up with some difficulties. I don't know if I have any cancer, but I have a tumor in my bladder. And prior to that, I'd had some polyps in my colon. And I've been through the colonoscopy procedure a couple of times. And, if your bowel habits start changing or things like you get blood in your stool, time to get it checked out. And the same thing happened with my wife. She was able to get quite a few polyps removed, all of which were benign, fortunately. But this current thing, we'll see if there's cancer in that tumor in the bladder, but all of it's not much fun.
Hey, what are you doing to take care of yourself? Have you changed your diet or anything like that, or are you in a place where that's difficult to do? What's your take?
I'm very fortunate to live out in a rural area, and so we do have good, clean, fresh well water, and we do eat a lot out of the garden, and a lot of times it's our neighbor's garden, because I'm pretty beat up, and our gardening is pretty light, but... Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of access to wonderful fresh fruit during the season, and we try to preserve our own for in the wintertime when there's no strawberries. We don't get anything that's got strawberries from California or Mexico or Chile. We just wait till they're ripe here.
Right on.
And that's what I would, recommend to people is eat what's around you and fresh and available.
Right.
And man, if it's from Chile, forget it.
God bless the Chilean people, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I got nothing against my Mexican neighbors. And they do a lot of produce growing that feeds lots and lots of Americans. I don't know. Do you really need to have...
Do you need a strawberry in December?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. We can wait. It's the taste of summer.
We can, right out in Milwaukee, they still grow all kinds of onions and cilantro and butter lettuce, and it's grown fresh right in Milwaukee, Oregon. It's close by and you get it year-round. So anyway, just eat right, eat good.
All right.
I wish cancer on no one. It's a tough disease. I don't know how I got to where I am, other than I know that bladder tumors are supposedly common in commercial transportation operators, truck drivers, bus drivers. And I did that for 36 years, so that may be some of it, but
who knows. Well, Rob, our hearts are with you, and you keep us in the loop and let us know what's going on, and thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, just eat right.
Okay. Good deal. Baker Sisters, were you just going to say, is that what your dad did for a living?
He actually did drive truck for many years, and then he went into office work after. He drove long haul from here to California when we first moved. He would actually sneak us on trips sometimes, so we went on some of his long haul trips. And then he did short hoppers here, but he did that for, that was his that was his career.
Wow. And we are talking about colon cancer here. Colon cancer awareness and prevention. We're live in Studio 2 with Michelle and Marcia Baker of the Steve Baker Colorectal Cancer Alliance. We're also joined by Cressida Mosley. She's an author and lecturer and educator, and she's our favorite local eating and healthy lifestyle expert. And the phone lines are open, folks. We're inviting people to call. Have you survived colon cancer? Are you living with it now, or someone in your family? We'd love to hear your story, because our goal today is to get people to go out and just get proactive about making sure that you don't get killed by something preventable.
Absolutely.
Is that our bumper sticker? And the number to call, 503-231-8187. And we have Pear on the phone. Pear, hey. Is that right? Hey, Pear, what's going on?
Well, hey, I had colon surgery back in 2005.
I didn't know that.
And went pretty good, and I had some liver surgery since, but everything's doing well now, and Kaiser's taking pretty good care of me.
Oh, good.
And
I'm
so, I don't know, it's feel good. You know, I got back problems, that's a different thing, you know.
Now, Per, have you changed your lifestyle at all? Are you getting more exercise, or
well,
are
I try
you...
to get more exercise, and... Main thing is I don't eat those steaks anymore, you know, and I cut out the beef. You know, I love barbecue myself.
I love barbecue. I would eat barbecue anything. Yeah. I'd eat a barbecue bale of hay.
You know, those big fatty ribs. I don't eat those anymore.
I love them so much.
Pork isn't too bad, but you know, actually, you know, the thing about barbecue is the sauce anyway.
Right.
You know, you don't have to put the sauce on a big piece of fatty meat.
You're saying I could put the sauce on the hay bale and it would still be good. That's actually true.
You could put it on all sorts of things. You know, I've been experimenting. I'm one of the world's great chefs, as everybody knows. But anyway, it's I wish everybody had, you know, if we can't have national health insurance, everybody should have something like Kaiser.
Yeah.
You know, because it was my family physician that first detected signs way back in 2005 and referred me to the colonoscopy. That was an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Get to see the inner me, you know.
You know,
you lie there on this table, you know, look at this TV screen, you know. Now that's me in there.
Made it to the big screen.
Yes.
All right, Pear. Thanks a lot for calling.
I just wish everybody well and keep, you know, eat right and you'll live.
Right on.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Pear.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for calling. We have another caller. Daniel, what's going on with you?
Well, the first thing that's going on is I'm going to take off my speakerphone and then I'm going to pull over to the side of the road for a minute here. I know, you're not supposed to condone that, and you're not. So
that's all off the record. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is what I love about KABU. Anyway, I just wanted to say so many different kinds of things, but I'm not a colon cancer survivor. I am a diabetic. That's type 2, and there's so many good things that you've said today. That is like getting back to the original sources of food, diet, those kinds of things. One of the things that I would be, you know, liking to take a look at, and I'll take my answer off here, is what are the incidences, though, of colon cancer, having formerly sold my soul to the devil and sold pharmaceuticals? I know that much of the medical establishment, including tests and pharmaceuticals, are not necessarily built to help patients. They're built to increase dollars. And so I'm curious about, and again, like I say, I'll take it off the air, the incidences of colon cancer, has that gone up in the last 30 to 40 years? How do we stack up with the rest of the world? You've already talked about early prevention and detection, yet I have some concerns about that. Whether or not, in fact, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's not to deride the people who have already called this morning with very serious, you know, cancer issues. My question then, the last one would be, and this is why I love the idea of your cookbook and teaching people to cook and eat differently. Have the rates of colon cancer gone up as we become more and more of a processed food society? In other words, those items that are salt, fat, and whatever, so they can be shipped across the country,
That's what I'm looking at, the correlation of those things.
Thanks.
I probably said a bunch, and I'm going to get off the air and let you take the answer off air, but I appreciate your show. Help people learn how to cook and eat. And I love the last guy who said he's experimenting. That's so encouraging.
And
it's so encouraging.
Thank you for calling, Daniel. And before the Baker sisters and Miss Mosley answer, I want to say that I think that we need to do a whole separate show about the farm, about the industry,
yes.
The medical industry, and the payments, and who makes money from stuff like this, because there's a whole show there. And I pledge to try to get Senator Chip Shields to come and be a guest on this show to talk about that, because he's been doing a lot around insurance reform, and I have a really deep, deep, deep family story about that too. And today we're actually focusing on how we can help each other and ourselves be healthy. And then in the future we'll do a show about the finances and the big system. But Baker Sisters, he's asking big picture, what's the trend for colon cancer?
To try to answer his question, I believe that the rates, colon cancer rates have gone down because of screening. Screening has gone up. But I would agree that it, any increase probably is associated with lifestyle and our eating habits and processed quick foods and lack of exercise, those and smoking and, you know, things of that nature. Just our lifestyle, those things will increase it. But I don't believe that it has gone up because there has been efforts made to because of screening. So the rates have gone down. I would agree, like he's saying, that you don't know, like if you're always battling like two evils or something, you feel like, but it's. All you can do is, like you said, you can be healthful, but we found that people who even are vegetarians, who never eat meat, exercise, like Julie who called in, she wasn't even at the screening age yet. So there's a lot of variables involved. I mean, she wouldn't even been screened yet.
Mm-hmm.
So she just had to be paying attention to her body.
Right.
So that's the one thing. And I know I wanted to say this too before, is that unfortunately, you usually don't even get symptoms until it's late stage.
That's terrible.
Stage three. Or stage four. So you wouldn't, like the blood in the stool, that's not going to usually be a polyp. That's usually going to be a presence of cancer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's the reason for the colonoscopy.
All right. And also, I just want to say really briefly, statistics, when we look at, statistics have a role when we look at healthcare issues and prevention issues, and yet they're not absolute. But one thing he didn't ask about that we haven't really touched on is the thing that's remarkable about colon cancer is that it's so readily treatable, but it is one of the things that kills so many people. Can you just talk about that a little? Who dies most often? Is it maybe people who don't have access to health care?
Of course, blacks and African Americans are at the highest rate. We, for some reason, get diagnosed at later stage and we die, and it's more aggressive for some reason.
There's a few cancers like that. They don't know why, but go ahead.
Yeah, just, I don't know. Unfortunately, like our dads, it grew on the, is it the upper right?
It's upper right.
And unfortunately, he had a sigmoidoscopy, which is not the full colonoscopy. And that one does not explore the entire colon. So that one explores only the lower left. And so unfortunately, he would have never found the upper right tumor. And that's where most black people grow their tumors. It's just they don't know why yet, but that's just how it is. But of course, underinsured and uninsured because access to screening. Mm-hmm. I know the Latino community has high rates as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe also they're seeing an increase in the Asian community, which is the link back to barbecue. Blacks and African Americans and Asians barbecue a lot of meat. And it's something about
the heat,
the charring of the meat and the meat fat. It does something in it, the carcinogens, and you take it in, and it's just not good. So
mm-hmm.
that barbecue has got to be reduced. We've got to reduce it. And that's big in our community. We love barbecue.
But not necessarily the sauce.
You can bake it and put the sauce on it, you know, pan fry it, or with some olive oil, and then put the sauce on it.
And we do have a couple callers, but somebody did ask for you to talk a little bit about your food cart, and where is it, and where how are they getting over there?
Our food cart is located on 3rd and Washington, right off of the Morrison Bridge, right next to Mamma Mia's restaurant. And so we're this little blue little house, and blue is the color for colorectal cancer. So we try to put colorectal cancer out there at all times. So we give out good information when you get great food. So come by and see us. We're open Monday through Friday, 11 to 3 o'clock.
All right. And we do have some more callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Joanne. Joanne, what do you think?
Well, I have a grandson who had colonoscopies as a child because of his Crohn's. I have a granddaughter in her early 20s, and the last and it was last year or whatever. She was at the emergency room for kidney stones and gallstones. And in the meantime, I got on top of my building all these cell phone things. And I think that we're going to see an awful lot of brain cancer because of all the technology we use. But I realize this is not your focus right now. And it's good to hear the males call in for a change.
And that is good.
Thanks, Joanne. So Joanne's actually going back to that issue, though, that basic issue about just basic wellness. How do you create an environment around yourself that you know is healthy? And I know that there's a lot of people that are concerned about the cell phone piece. Sometimes I want to think of, and Miss Mosley's waving her cell phone around. But, you know, It can become a trade-off. It's like someone that I know who keeps talking about the insanity of the modern age. You know, how do you figure out a way to be healthy? And Joanne's also going to the issue of chronic health in children and little kids and Crohn's. I think it's called Crohn's disease. Mm-hmm. The disorders and the things that can be linked to that. And so again, trying to stay on top of you know, just your basic health care and be where you need to be to get the procedures you need. We have a couple more callers. Again, I want to carve out some time to talk with Christina Mosley about local eating, but we want to go to the phone lines. Maggie, we've got Maggie on the phone. Maggie, what's your story? What's going on?
It doesn't have anything to do with me or somebody I know that has colon cancer, had it or whatnot, but I was just thinking about the fact that I'm diabetic too, and I know that in the Black community, diabetes is pretty high, and so I'm thinking, and the question I have is, you know, for me, well, the question, I'll come to the question in a second, but let me just say a few things. Since 2010, I've been drastically just making sure that my carb content is really low, but not super low, like not Atkins low or anything like that, but just being more vigilant about, you know, eating healthier with the fiber and reducing my sugar. And I never really ate much sugar, but just reducing carbs. Carbs are in everything. And so I also noticed, and then just in the last, since October, I've been reducing it a lot more, like really being careful to eat more vegetables, and, you know, and being careful not to take in that carbs because I want to keep my hemoglobin low, my blood sugars low. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I'm almost not even considered diabetic anymore. I manage it through diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, you know, I do consume, I would say, you know, more meat than I used to consume. And that does consist of some red meat, pretty, I'd say, lean meat, not that often, but I do consume a lot of it, and I'd say cheese more than anything. So can you comment on just your thoughts on the cheese and the red meat in respect to the potentially getting colon cancer? Or
thanks for calling, Maggie.
I can take my question off the air.
Excellent.
So, thank you.
Thank you for putting that on the table, because these issues of there's so many things that we deal with that are linked to diet. My father had what my grandma called sugar diabetes. Go ahead.
Your sugars. Right. I actually have heard of people who have diabetes eating because of the carbs, so they eat a very high meat diet, and I saw that, and I didn't understand it because I know it's, because that seems like hard on your heart too. But I guess you probably want to balance it with lots of vegetables. That's my only, I mean, I'm not a medical doctor or anything, but it just sounds like it would be because cholesterol and everything. Because that's just like the, remember the Atkins diet? Everybody was big on the Atkins
diet.
My dad
was on it all the time. He tried to do it.
He thought he could eat salad dressing. He thought he could eat just salad dressing. Like it was.
Well, I used to always say to my mom and dad that you're always on the Atkins diet because they just ate meat and like iceberg lettuce.
But, yes. So they had they were just eating the meat. My mom was a little better though because she would eat the fish. But mm-hmm. dad always had to have the big steak, you know. But I think that she would probably want to, I would say really increase her intake of vegetables and fruit and probably exercise a whole bunch to move that meat through. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's what exercise does to you too.
It's your digestion.
It sort of aids in moving your working your colon, your intestines, so you want to move it through. I that would be definitely a medical question, though, from a doctor.
Also, Maggie, you should go down to the food cart over there at what did we say? It was at Third and Washington, and have a conversation, because this is really important. It's just literally looking for balance in what you're eating.
And all in moderation.
That's what my brother says all the time, moderation.
All in moderation.
But now, I mean, we do have another caller, but I want to give the talking stick to Miss Mosley, because you are... A lot of people have touched on this issue of eating locally. And the last time we had you on the air, there were some people like, is it more important that it's organic, or is it more important that it's local? You know, and there's so many choices and so many standards of eating that we have. But how do we navigate that, Ms. Mosley? How do we do that?
Well, when you go in the grocery store, everything is in season, correct? Just like we just talked about strawberries. So strawberries are in season right now, but they're not. And so people are confused because they're there. So they think, oh, fair game, right? Well, there's a number of problems with them coming from Chile. One of them being, obviously, probably pesticide issues. What type of things are they spraying them with? Secondly, they don't taste as good, right? And that probably is the most important. They don't taste as good. And then also the transportation issue. How they get them there. That all costs money. It's all bad on the environment as well. So there's a list, and it's called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. Look it up on the internet, and you can find out which things are the most heavily pesticide.
I was just thinking of that. I was just making a note. I feel like Consumer Reports or somebody like that, they analyze fruits and vegetables. They analyze fruits and vegetables to see which ones are actually the safest for you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it has to do with what has actually been directly sprayed with poison versus something that's been peeled. But that list always surprises me, actually.
So it's apples are number one. They're sprayed heavily. Mm. So we always buy those organic. Our greens like kale and collards. I know kale definitely is on the dirty, so you should buy it organic. Lettuces as well. Celery. Thank you. So there's 12 on there that are highly sprayed with pesticides and such. So we should follow the Dirty Dozen recommendation on those. Things with peels, oranges, avocados. Obviously, we don't have to worry about them as much because they already have an outer core. But again, I think a lot of this comes back about being educated about these things, knowing that this is out there. So it's a speaking about it and then it's figuring out, okay, because some people just don't even realize it, or they just go into the store and they don't even think about it. They just pick the strawberries up, and you know, it just always seems weird to me to buy a strawberry or a watermelon in the middle of the winter.
For me, it's grapes. Grapes talk to me. Talk to me, and I see them, and it's like, whoa, come and get me. I love grapes so much. But you should eat grapes in the fall, people. Eat them in the fall. Sorry, go ahead.
So I don't remember the original question, but
it was as Maggie was talking about. The original question was Maggie saying, "Look, I've got these other food priorities, and because of my diabetic situation, I'm controlling it through diet and exercise, so that I don't have to take pharmaceuticals for that. But part of that is that I'm eating some red meat, and so that was the original question. She's like, "What's your take on that? Should I compensate?" And then I was basically saying somebody else talked about eating local, because last time we had Miss Mosley on the air. When it came down to it, Miss Mosley was saying maybe in the end one of the most important things that you should look for is what's local, because that actually covers some of your other bases.
Exactly.
Means, you know, maybe it is sprayed, but it's actually probably riper. It hasn't traveled so far. So.
Exactly. And when you buy local, you're putting back into our community.
Yeah.
Right? And you can kind of follow the source of where the food came from, and that's another beauty about cooking at home, because then you know exactly what you've put in your food. If you buy something from a box or a package, or you go out to some type of restaurant, you're not sure where what ingredients and what things are being put in the food. Right.
And you just said things put in the food. The magical engineering pixie just ran a note in here saying, talking about the corn. And so there's funky things going on with corn. Mm-hmm. And corn's in almost every packaged food. Mm-hmm. And I love garden corn. There's your perfect example of something that you should eat locally, actually. We do have a couple of callers, but do you want to just tackle the corn for a second? Corn's a big one.
Ooh, it's huge. It's in everything. It's in everything. And we don't even, most people don't even realize what it's in everything. Mm-hmm. It's in our gas, right? Then they turn it into high fructose corn soap, and then they put it in pop, and they put it in soda pop, and, you know, everything. I don't know. It's too big. I can't tackle it.
Okay.
It's just, it's in everything. And when you don't even realize that it's in there, it's in there. Mm-hmm. So
sauces, same with gluten, too.
Salad dressings.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why we can control it better if we do what?
Eat locally
and cook
stuff.
At home. Yes.
That you know what it was.
Yeah. Exactly.
And just briefly, we do have a couple more callers, but I just want to draw people's attention because something interesting happened last week. Michael Pollan, who is the food expert, he had an article in the New York Times about how a really important, gigantic, recent study about diabetes came out. And it's a groundbreaking study, and they're fully connecting diabetes to sugar. And you need to go and check that out. And it's on, you know, NYTNewYorkTimes.com or whatever. But he's saying that it was a huge study and that this is a groundbreaking study. And in the past, we've linked diabetes to all kinds of stuff, especially fat and all sorts of things. But he's saying it really goes back to the sugar. And I was cracking up because my grandmother used to always say that. My grandmother, she'd like, you eat all that, you're going to get sugar diabetes. Yeah. She was right. And it looks like she had her fingers on the pulse there. And that is what my dad had, too. Mm-hmm. All that Ben & Jerry's. You know, Ben & Jerry's, they've got organic flavors. Is that really? You have our organic ice cream, but is that what you are you going to really going to sit down and eat that whole container? Is it really healthy? So use your head. Use your head with that. There's
that's
a lot of organic junk food.
Reading labels. Label reading. That's like a big thing.
This mostly educates people about the label reading.
Well, I would say don't read them because you wouldn't eat anything in a box.
Well, that's true. That's true. Very true.
So I didn't even think about it because I don't buy things that come in a box normally. So everything that I'm buying is fresh. I'm using whole grain, so I'm starting with the whole grain. And if I am eating something in a box, I don't even worry about the label because at that point I already know that
this is a secret pleasure thing. Anyway, so we have some more callers. Let's go back to the phone line. Leah's on the phone. Leah, what's going on?
Good morning, ladies. I am a Crohn's survivor. I have not, to my knowledge, had colon cancer, but doctors don't always tell you everything. But it's been almost 20 years now since I had my colon removed. And I was back in the hospital numerous times. I had sepsis. They were chopping me up about every 2 weeks. And I finally realized that if I was going to survive, I had to get out on my own. And so I did, and I went to herbs, and from there I went to changing my diet, and things began to change. But the biggest change for me came when I started eating differently, and I started eating lots of vegetables and green soups, juicing, green stuff. My friends, I learned about phytochemicals in tomatoes, and from there I went to learning more about how to eat raw foods. I am a survivor, so I can't do a lot of raw foods, but I can juice everything. I also ended up diabetic as a result of that because of all the toxins and probably a past history in my life of too much sugar. But one of the things, two things, the Crohn's, irritable bowel, and colitis, Crohn's are at epidemic proportions. There are not enough doctors to handle everything.
Wow.
It's really bad. The second thing is, one of the places I go all the time now, it's my Bible, is the Wellness Journal. You can find it on the internet. You can pick it up at New Seasons, at Powell's, the bookstores. It is the place, and they keep everything for years and years and years. So it doesn't matter what you've got. You can go there and find out about it. What I learned from them was minerals, that this is one of the things that we don't have. We don't have minerals in our food. We don't have minerals in our soils. And minerals are at the bottom of almost all of our diseases, including the teeth. And that's what that fluoridation thing's about. That's a boondoggle. It's the minerals in your teeth that you don't have that causes decay.
Wow.
So supplementing with minerals is really important, a good mineral supplement. And do your homework, folks.
Thanks, Leah. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
She's saying eat local. And just, we're going to go to the next caller really quickly, but, you know, Leah actually kind of touched on something briefly that I really want to hit. That sounds so violent. I want to bring it up. She said, you know, I went to herbs and then I started juicing. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, I don't know about you, but I don't pay attention to what I drank, right?
Yes.
I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have a couple beers or whatever. And you have to pay attention to the drink. And so my husband, who's like the healthiest person in the universe, he had his colonoscopy and they're like, wow, you got the cleanest whistle we've ever seen. He didn't have any polyps or anything. That guy, he drinks herb tea every day. And he's a connoisseur of herb tea and whole grains, and he loves morning muesli. He's crabby if he doesn't have morning muesli with fruit in it. And we will dabble in mangoes. Mm. We're mango dabblers. Mm. And if you go outside, you'll see that they're not growing from the trees in Portland. But, you know, I think that it's just like a choice that we make and that he makes. It's like, what's the cream in your coffee? I don't know what it is. Everybody's going to have some kind of little sweet that they like. And I don't think that's the worst thing that you could do. Mm-hmm. So I really want to go to the next caller. I'm kind of excited. Dr. Armanijad, is that you?
Hi, Dr. Avenjoy. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on? We're talking about colon health this morning. What's your take?
Very good. You know, I know the Baker.
Hi, Dr. Avenjoy.
I also know Christina. Hello, guys.
Hello. Good morning.
This was not planned.
Thanks for allowing me to come on air. Very good conversation, guys. I've been listening and it's very interesting. You guys know a lot. I'm proud of you guys. As a colorectal surgeon, I do a colonoscopy for colon cancer screening myself. And I have seen devastating stories that I've decided to dedicate my entire life to educating folks and taking the education beyond exam rooms to the community. One thing I do want to mention is that colon cancer incidence is beginning to decrease as more and more people begin to get screened. We are now removing more polyps than before because people are beginning to get educated about this, but there's a long, long way to go. One thing you don't understand is that polyps are like milk in the fridge. They are like milk in the fridge. They can turn into something bad. So you do want to get them removed before they turn into something bad. Because once they do, they become cancerous, and it's oftentimes it's a little too late, and you're looking at later stage of cancer. Mm-hmm. Another thing I want to mention is that African Americans definitely do need to be screened by age of 45. We don't know the reason why, but one thing we do know is that African Americans tend to present earlier with aggressive stage cancer. It has something to do with the biology of the tumor, but no studies have really shown why that's the reason. One thing to know is that any other ethnic group above the age of 50, if you were to scope anybody above the age of 50, about 25 to 40% of people will have polyps in their colon. So that's why it is important to get screened. It's a very, very preventable cancer, and we all have to be screened. I was listening, and one of the other callers did have interesting comments on fiber and red meat. Can they reduce cancer? Yes, but there's really no level one study that have shown this. But one thing we do know is that red meat can lead to production of carcinogens when it's cooked in high heat or grilled. There was one European study, and not a lot of people were in that study, but however, it was not a level one study, by the way. But it looked at three groups of individuals. One group ate nothing but red meat that was boiled with high heat for 14 days. Another group ate high-fiber diet plus red meat. And then another group ate nothing but vegetarian diet. When they looked at the stools that these people put out after 14 days, they collected the stools for 14 days and looked at the compounds that red meat release. They saw that in the first group who ate just nothing but red meat that were boiled on high heat had so much of these compounds that were released after red meat is cooked at high heat.
Hey, doctor, we are running out of show. We've got 30 seconds left of this show. I really want to thank you for calling. God, I hope we can get you on the air again. And this has been an incredible show. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Michelle and Marcia Baker and Christina Mosley. Links to their work on our website right now. That's kboo.fm. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. The show will be podcast on kboo.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis in Albany. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next on Political Perspectives, Don Merrill speaks with Arun Gandhi, the fifth grandson of India's legendary leader, Mohandas Mahatma Gandhi, about his life and work. At 9:30, we'll hear an interview with psychotherapist Dr. Harriet Fraud on capitalism, family, and family values. At 10 o'clock here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an in-depth interview with Ava Gollinger, a former advisor to Hugo Chavez, the man most likely to succeed Chavez as president. Also, investigative reporter Greg Palast. And at 11, the Bike Show looks at the first critical mass event in 1992 and the changes since then. They feature the program Action Speaks, which examines underappreciated 20th century dates that changed America.
Voices from the Edge will be interviewing Paul Gorski on white privilege and racism on Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Tune in to listen to the interview regarding race, privilege, anti-racism, anti-poverty activism, education, women's rights, immigrants' rights, and more. That's Voices from the Edge, this Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
This Wednesday at 6 p.m., tune in to Treasures from the KBOO Vault. We'll feature an interview conducted by Margaret Butler with two representatives of Voices of Hope and Anger, women who are fighting the presence of United States military bases domestically and internationally.
Who have, through sharing our stories, our personal experiences, and our work opposing militarism, have made connections. And we have established the fact that our struggles are linked. And that's sometimes difficult to do just with words.
And we'll also listen to a recording of Joan Baez performing in the early 1970s at Reed College. That's this Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KBOO Portland.
Arun Gandhi is the fifth grandson of his iconic grandfather, Mohandas Mahatma Gandhi. He traveled to the Pacific Northwest recently to talk about his work on his grandfather's legacy. In this interview, I'll be talking with Arun Gandhi.